The earliest memories in the mind of Shem were of the construction of the ark. If we take the reference in chapter 6 of Genesis and verse 3 to refer to the period of time before the destruction of the world in the great flood as being 120 years from the time that the Lord spoke to Noah, then it is certain that Shem was born during that time. It is true for most people that they have some vivid memories of events from their earliest years. Many of those days cannot be remembered later in life, and that is undoubtedly a good thing for the child. Sometimes the parent may wish to forget some of those events in later time, but cannot. But there are a few incidents that will tend to stand out, though the nature of those memories may be hazy. I remember a particular incident from the latter part of 1954, when I was just 2 years old. The Northeast at that time, and I don't remember this except in the context of having read history subsequently, so my experience I put into that context. The Northeast in the latter part of that year was affected by a powerful hurricane, one of the last major hurricanes to strike the northeastern part of the United States. I think, although I'm not certain, that it was called Debbie. And that's no reflection on our sister of that name. But I have the memory at that time of being in my mother's arms and watching with her out the back window of our home in Pennsylvania as the metal lid of a trash can from some neighboring property went flying across our yard. I don't really remember anything else except that moment. You may have a memory of some type of similar event, or you may not. But there is a point when you think back in your memory where you retain more and more things that happened, and you retain them in a more connected fashion. Think of Shem this evening. As far back as he could recall, his father was engaged in the great work of his life, building the ark. Undoubtedly, Shem remembered the day when he joined that project, and how from the time of his boyhood, throughout his teenage years, and on into adulthood, after he had been married, that project, the building of the ark, occupied all of his attention. Decade after decade went by, and that's what Shem was doing, building the ark. During that time, he was able to listen to his father's preaching, listen to the solemn warnings to the people of that age to flee from the wrath that was going to come. No doubt Shem could recall the derision with which neighbors and friends reacted to Noah's great effort to build the ark. Through those years, Shem could remember the stellar testimony of Methuselah. And how Methuselah, who lived longer than any man in the history of the world, how Methuselah often spoke of the prophecies of Enoch, another ancestor, Methuselah's father. Enoch, the only man who had never died. During those years, as he listened to Methuselah, as he listened to his father, Shem must have wondered how it would come about, how this great flood of which these men spoke would materialize. It had never rained. So when he heard Noah speak about it raining, it was hard for him to conceive of what that meant. And especially when Noah said it was going to rain for 40 days and 40 nights. Shem had lived well over 90 years when the time came that the ark was finished, when that long project finally came to an end. And the cargo that the ark was to carry began to be placed on board. As Shem and his wife and his two brothers and their wives joined their parents in going through the doorway into the ark, they must have had the sense that those whom they had seen in those last days before they went into the ark, they would never see again. There is no evidence, in spite of fanciful interpretations, whether written or pictured, to the contrary, there's no evidence that any of those people had any compunction about their derisive attitude toward that small group, 8 souls that entered the ark. They were certain that they would emerge from the ark again, looking rather sheepish for having done this thing, and that the people who had mocked Noah and his family would truly have the last laugh. Then it began to rain. In torrents, the rain cascaded across the surface of the world. In the language of Scripture, the windows of heaven were opened, and the fountains of the great deep ruptured with great violence, and the great subterranean caverns of water were broken open, and the water shot into the atmosphere and began to fall down and flood the world. The people who could run did so, but they didn't get far. There is evidence in the fossil layers that people and dinosaurs ran side by side in a vain effort to escape the onrushing flood. And before long, only the people and the animals in the ark were left alive. Shem was one of those people. And he had the opportunity to ponder the powerful lessons of the experience through which he was living. It took more than a month until the rain stopped, and by that time the ark was floating on the global ocean, and it continued to do so for nearly 4 additional months before it came to rest, 5 months from the time they entered the ark and the door was closed and the rain began. For 5 months, the ark was floating. It took a long time after that before they could emerge from the ark. More than a year after the rain began, Noah and his family were directed by the Lord to leave the ark, and they came out of the ark into a far different world than the one they had left behind. And for just over 5 centuries after that day, Shem lived in that new world. He never forgot, we may be sure, the vivid experiences of those years before the flood. He saw the reality of wickedness begin to reassert itself very, very quickly after the flood, even in his own family. But for his descendants, their memories would never have any direct experiences of the world that had disappeared. They would only know of that old world and of the experiences of the flood through that which their father Shem would tell them. Now that was certainly true of Shem's brothers, of Ham and Japheth as well. It was true, of course, of Noah. They could all tell stories of the world that was gone and of the way in which it had perished. But Shem, as we mentioned last week, is put into a unique position in Scripture as the ancestor of the Shemite people, as the ancestor of the line through which ultimately the Redeemer would come into the world. And so it is certainly appropriate for us this evening to speak of Shem as the man from two worlds. The man from two worlds. Not many men can say that they are from two worlds. Shem was one. Now there's much we can learn by considering what the Scriptures teach us about Shem. If you just look through these early chapters of Genesis, beginning in chapter 6 and going through chapter 11, you will pick up on a few things about Shem. One of the things that is most notable, and we're not really going to get into it to any extent this evening, we've already dealt with it, but in chapter 9, and verse 23. When Ham, the father of Canaan, as we see in verse 22, saw the nakedness of his father and told his two brethren without, we read about Shem and Japheth, that they took a garment and laid it upon both their shoulders and went backward and covered the nakedness of their father, and their faces were backward, and they saw not their father's nakedness. So that from that we learn that Shem was a man of upright character and decency and did not wish, as Ham had done, to take advantage of his father's drunkenness. We can learn in looking at the life of Shem that God does not lie, that every promise of blessing and of judgment will come to pass. Shem testified to that. We can learn from Shem the importance of trusting Christ, getting into the ark while there's still time to do so. How many times did Shem think through his long life on those faces that he had seen in those days before they went into the ark? People with whom he had spoken, perhaps people with whom he had done business, people to whom they had tried to deliver a word of warning, and all to no avail. Only 8 got into the ark. And after that, there was no more opportunity. And the judgment of God came. But specifically, when we consider the legacy that Shem left with his descendants, of whom we read in Genesis 10 and 11, there are 3 things upon which we do well to meditate this evening. First of all, Shem's knowledge. Now we're concerned especially with what Shem knew, with the knowledge that he brought with him from the old world. That is knowledge that he would impart to those who were born to him and to his wife in the new world, and obviously to their descendants in continuing generations. Now, this was knowledge that Shem had that he could communicate to his descendants in the new world, and it was the only way they would know anything about the world that was gone. Now, there are two ways in which Shem came into possession of this knowledge that he had. One of them was by revelation. That is, the knowledge that he had that had to do with the building of the ark, the way it was to be done, the prospect that the world was going to face divine judgment, that was God's revelation. God had said to Noah, and that was no doubt transmitted to his sons as well, this is what will happen, and this is how you're to prepare for that event. Shem could tell his children and his grandchildren and his great-grandchildren and so on that the Creator himself was the one who was responsible for the building of the ark. Now, remember again what I'm saying. That the descendants of Shem, that whereas they may have been able, we don't know, they may have been able still to see the ark where it came to rest. Let's remember that the ark was up in a mountain range. And most people did not live up in a mountain range. They lived down below. So most people would not have had opportunity to actually see the ark. So that their knowledge of the ark was dependent on that which Shem would communicate to them. And no doubt he felt this responsibility keenly. And wanted to be sure that the information he gave was correct, it was accurate. And where had he gotten that information? He had got it from the revelation of God. The directions for the project had been very explicit. There was a particular way in which they were to go about the construction of the ark. So Shem had knowledge that he had gained by the revelation of God. Things that he knew that God had said. And no doubt that knowledge of the revelation of God extended back through the generations all the way to Adam. And the knowledge in particular of the promise of the coming Redeemer, the seed of the woman. But Shem had also gained knowledge through his own experience. After all, he was one of the ones who helped to build the ark. Noah did not build it all by himself. When his sons were old enough, they were no doubt enlisted in the project. He had knowledge by his experience of the reality that existed in the old world that brought about the flood. That is, he could tell his descendants, you want to know why there was a flood? Here is the reason. Because Shem, in the nearly 100 years that he lived before the flood came, had seen with his own eyes the pervasive character of sin. Let's turn back to chapter 6. In chapter 6 and verse 5, we read, God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Now let's look at verse 11. The earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. And God looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth. Now listen, Shem was an eyewitness to that. Whether he actually saw acts of violence or not, we can't be certain, though the probability is strong that he did. The earth was full of it. And we read here that every descendant of Adam, regardless of his lineage, had become part of the corruption. Yes, even the descendants of Adam through Seth had become part of this corruption. And it was only, we read in chapter 6, the grace of God that had delivered Noah out of that corruption. Noah and his sons and their wives. It was only God's grace. Noah found grace in God's sight, not because Noah was somehow better than the others, but because it had pleased God in the purpose of His eternal decree to choose Noah and to call him. So in the world after the flood, Shem undertook the instruction of his sons. We read a list of his sons in chapter 10 and verse 22. Elam and Asher and Arphaxad and Lud and Aram. These are the sons of Shem that are here named. It's interesting, is it not, that Arphaxad is not first in the list. He's third. And yet Arphaxad, as we read in chapter 11, is the one through whom the promised seed was to come. Now when Shem undertook the instruction of these sons, of whom we read, what did he tell them about the old world? Well, he would have had to tell them that there were no words sufficient to paint the horror of the perversion that had filled that world. He couldn't paint it as black as it was. And that would be a platform on which Shem could speak of the horrors of sin, of the pervasive nature of sin, the way in which it spreads through every fabric of society, and through which it spreads in every part of the soul. And he could warn his sons and his daughters about the folly of going down the path of sin. And there's a lesson for our children and our young people this evening. The lesson of Shem that he communicated to his sons. Sin never, never, never brings about anything good. Never. Now the reasoning of the world is, well, sometimes these things appear bad, but actually there's something good that comes out of them. That's not true of sin. Sin does not cause any positive effect. And if that message gets burned into the minds of our children and our young people, that sin never brings anything good, then there will be some hope for the days to come in your lives. Can you imagine the burden that must have been on Shem as he saw these sons of his and thought about the world that was gone and thought about the reality that already the sin was manifesting itself again in the new world? He had knowledge. You have knowledge. It's the knowledge that comes in the Scriptures. It's the knowledge that comes from those who have gone in the way before you. You have knowledge. And you must communicate that knowledge. But there's something more for us to consider as we look at Shem in this text this evening, and that is Shem's witness. Now there is a heavy emphasis placed on Shem's part in all that took place in the year when the judgment of God poured out upon the world. And I want us just to go back to chapter 7. We're going back over ground we've already covered. But I want us to go back to chapter 7 and see the focal place in which Shem is put. Look at verse 7. And Noah went in, and his sons, and his wife, and his sons' wives with him into the ark because of the waters of the flood. Look at verse 11. In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, the 17th day of the month, the same day were all the fountains of the great deep broken up, and the windows of heaven were opened. And the rain was upon the earth 40 days and 40 nights, in the selfsame day entered Noah and Shem and Ham and Japheth, the sons of Noah, and Noah's wife, and the three wives of his sons with him into the ark, they and every beast after his kind, and so on. And what follows is a description then of what they experienced in the ark. In verse 17, the flood was 40 days upon the earth, and the waters increased and bare up the ark, and it was lift up above the earth. Verse 23, every living substance was destroyed which was upon the face of the ground, both man and cattle, and the creeping things, and the fowl of the heaven, and they were destroyed from the earth. And Noah only remained alive, and they that were with him in the ark. So the Holy Spirit would have us to remember that there were others besides Noah. And Shem was to occupy a very important place. Now think of Shem. He had seen the ark when it was being built. You could remember, and it's hard for us to conceive of it, but decades went by in that project. He had taken part. No doubt he could remember the time when they had, according to the instruction of God, sealed the ark inside and outside with pitch. He could remember the day when the word of the Lord came to them and said, it's time to go in. It's time to enter the ark. That was an act of great faith on their parts. To enter the ark. It had never rained. And they had to measure the possibility, as those around them would have reminded them, that you'll just go in there and you'll come back out again. But the Lord told them to go in, and they went in. And we read that the Lord closed the door behind them. He shut them in. Inside the ark they were. And inside the ark they had protection and they had fellowship. I was thinking about that this afternoon. We often think about these eight people on the ark and we envision them sort of going about their own thing. It was a large vessel and they had a lot of responsibilities, things to do every day, and we just see them as it were. You know, they get their list each day and they go on about their business. But there was fellowship there. They were together. They were family. But more than family, they were people who were in the protection of the ark. And inside the ark, enjoying that protection and enjoying that fellowship, they could engage in the service of the Lord. They were serving the Lord there. I think you'll have to agree that that put a whole different cast upon their responsibilities in that year and a little more that they spent inside that vessel. Every day looking after animals, feeding those that were not hibernating, taking care of the waste that they would generate, keeping things in order. And as they were doing that, they were serving the Lord. They were the Lord's agents to preserve these animals alive so that they could come out and begin to spread abroad again in the earth. But they could only serve the Lord inside the ark. What a lesson for us. We can only serve the Lord when we are in Christ. Outside, there was nothing but devastation. They couldn't see. We've said before that there was a design in that. God did not want them to see. They were inside, and what they could see inside was that God was faithful. God was preserving them. Shem, with that experience, that witness could gather his sons around him and he could say, you are living in the world because of the provision God made for me in the ark. That's why you're here. If it hadn't been for the ark, I would have perished in the flood. And Shem could speak to them of the day that came when the ark stopped floating on the water. When the bottom of the ark came to rest, as the scriptures tell us, in the mountains of Ararat. And he could speak to his sons about the wonder of emerging into the new world with the realization they were the only people alive. All traces of the population of the world that had existed before had been wiped from the earth, buried under tons and tons of sediment, only to be uncovered many, many millennia later by ambitious archaeologists. That was the witness that Shem left to those who came behind him. Sin brings only one result, and that is devastation. But in the ark, God makes provision for people to be delivered from that judgment. That was his witness, what he had seen. But there's a third thing that constitutes the legacy of this man from two worlds. Shem's prophecy. Shem was a prophet. In the long line of the prophets going all the way back to Adam and to Abel and to Seth, Shem could speak to his descendants about something that happened after the flood. He could speak to them about the rainbow. Look at chapter 9. Look at verse 8. God spake unto Noah and to his sons with him, and to his sons with him, saying, and I, behold, I establish my covenant with you and with your seed after you. That is, he speaks to Shem, to Ham and to Japheth, and to Shem in particular, this is a covenant for your seed after you. Verse 12, God said, this is the token of the covenant which I make between me and you and every living creature that is with you for perpetual generations. I do set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be for a token of a covenant between me and the earth. And it shall come to pass, when I bring a cloud over the earth, that the bow shall be seen in the cloud. And I will remember my covenant, which is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh. And the water shall no more become a flood to destroy all flesh. This was a word given not only to Noah, but to his sons. And we read in verse 18, the sons of Noah that went forth of the ark were Shem and Ham and Japheth. Ham is the father of Canaan. These are the three sons of Noah, and of them was the whole earth overspread. Shem could gather his sons, and he could point their attention to something he had never seen when he was growing up in the old world, to a dark cloud in the sky, a thunderhead, or a big bank of dark clouds. And he could point their attention to something they could see in that dark cloud. If the angle of the sun was right, they could see a rainbow. And he could have them remember that God's message was to be seen in that rainbow. And the message of God was that he was faithful to his covenant. And if that was true regarding the promise not to bring a flood anymore on the world, then Shem said it's true of the promise to bring the Redeemer into the world. The promise of redemption was a sure promise. Christ would most surely come. And why would he come? He would come, Shem would say, to make good on everything that the first Adam had failed so miserably to do. Shem's message, his prophecy was, there's going to come another Adam. And he will be perfect. Shem could say to his sons, you will never lose by being faithful to the truth. There is a great reward in being faithful to the truth. And that's a message that is still true to this day. You will never lose by being faithful to the truth. And at the same time, Shem could tell his sons, the judgment for defying that truth is also very great. And as we have already seen, it didn't take very long for that old rebellion to break forth again at the Tower of Babel. But Shem's prophecy always pointed to the coming of the Redeemer. What could Shem say to his sons? The flood had not derailed God's purpose. The Redeemer was still going to come. And in the sons of Shem, and especially in Arphaxad, and the sons that would be born to him, there was the further refining of this purpose of God. So Shem could say to his sons, this is a new world. I've told you about the old world. I've told you about the devastation of the flood. I've told you about the ark and the protection that we found in the ark. But now this is a new world. And it's a world likewise cursed by sin. But there is every reason, he could tell them, to live for God and to live for the truth in the new world. Even though the new world would very quickly assume the scars of the old. And there's Shem's message for us tonight. There is every reason to live for the truth, to give yourself to the truth, to live in the service of Christ. The world may bear all the scars of perversion and may mock those who take their stand for Christ. Just yesterday I was reading about one of the senators from Illinois, who is a candidate for the presidential nomination of his party, getting up before a convention of the United Church of Christ, one of the most liberal Protestant denominations there is, and saying that it was a sad thing that the Christian right had hijacked the faith. Well, I don't think Senator Obama knows enough about the faith to be able to say anything intelligent about it. But it doesn't matter what he says or what anyone else says. There is still every reason to live for the truth, to commit yourself to the truth. So many people that lived in the world before the flood were never seen again. But Shem was one who lived for the truth, and his legacy is still with us to this hour. So will yours be to the very end when you give yourself to the truth and follow in the way of Christ. And may God help us to do so in this age, to be found faithful to the truth.